You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, Nick. I'm terrified.
Oh, you should be, man. You should be. How you doing today?
I'm good. Up to now, I'm good.
Up to now, because we're talking. Because you know.
I had a nice quiet day until I just popped the headphones on and there you are. And,
no.
What do you got for me?
Well, here's the thing. There's many things that we're going to talk about today. We have an amazing guest here today. But this actually, for the cold open portion of this, I actually do want to be serious about something. I wanted to send some love out to all the Disney cast members.
I write about this.
Yeah, so for those of you who have been listening to the pod for a while, you know that we are huge Disney fans, Disney park fans, and Disney just announced a layoff of about 28,000 of their workers, cast members. And so we have had so many Disney fans on the pod and we talk about it all the time. So I just thought that we actually should, like, in all seriousness, no jokes, just say, we love you. We thank you, and please keep bringing the joy into your own lives that you've brought into ours. So, see, that's it. That's all I wanted to say.
That was really nice.
I know. I can be a nice person sometimes, Alex.
Just say something mean too.
Proud boys, stand by.
Little justice.
welcome to the fucked up racist 2020. That is Little Justice, the podcast.
More like it.
Now we're doing the damn thing. Dude, that fucking debate we can talk about because good.
I don't want to talk about it.
Good.
We ordered about $90 worth of sushi and got wine delivered and just hunkered down. And Emine is from Turkey, so this is kind of her first big election.
Oh my God.
Please don't judge us by this. Like, this is where we will overcome.
We will. Sure. We have to. And one of the ways that we will is by having people in the country like our guest today. This person who has decided to join us. I want to bring her on because she's just the best. And I know she has something to say about this shit. This woman is just a podcast extraordinaire. You probably have heard her on the Hamilcast. You've definitely heard her on True Crime Obsessed. Ted and Michael read sketches in the microphones. She is just an incredible, incredible person. Jillian Pensavala, come on to the
Nick.
Show.
Hey. Hey,
what's
Alex.
Up?
Welcome. How are you guys doing?
We are good. Let me tell you something right now. It's very strange to hear your voice in the position that you're in, but be talking to you. Do you know what I mean?
Well, because I'm thrilled to be on your podcast for once, because you've been on the Hamilcast three times. You've been on Ted and Michael Reed Sketches into Microphones. We don't have guests on True Crime Obsessed, but you're like, it's nice to be hosted by you for once.
By us. I'm going to try to be like as consummate of a host as you are on your podcast. And this is what I wanted to bring up. And I'm glad that you said the name is, we also, you know, we cover the basis of your podcast because good Lord. So, Alex, I wanted to tell you about this.
Please do.
So I'm terrified of true crime. I'm terrified. Like, I don't like listening to stories about the killings that have actually happened. They scare me. They scare me to death. So it took me a second to listen to True Crime Obsessed. And Jillian is a dear friend. And of course, I want to support everything she does. But I was like, if I, you know, just the idea of listening to these pods, you know, about people being killed, this is not my favorite thing. But the past week, I was like, when I knew Jillian was coming on, I was like, I got to listen to this thing. Let me listen to this. Jillian, I need to understand.
Okay. Oh, no.
The how do I phrase this? The phenomenon that is Patrick. I need to understand it because I wasn't prepared for you and him. Like, Jillian, Alex, Jillian on Hamilcast is like chill and like, I mean, it's like But this show, Jillian, talk to us about this, because this
So the Hamilcast is like, is True Crime Obsessed and the Hamilcast are two like completely real, but completely opposite versions of myself. So when I'm on the Hamilcast and I'm talking to you or Lynn or Manny Gonzalez or someone, the heightened, like the enthusiasm, I was telling Alex before we recorded, like, I'm an interrupter. I hate it. It's the ADHD, but it's out of enthusiasm. And also, if I don't say it now, it'll be gone forever. And so I just want to say it. And so that's where the excitement comes. You know, the ensemble members, and I love this, and this is so exciting. Now, True Crime Obsessed is where we recap true crime documentaries. So that is where, because I hate true crime too, Nick, and I'm very honest with my anxiety and the things that trigger me on that podcast, and like animal stuff and any kind of sexual assault. As a survivor of sexual assault, covering those cases is always very hard for me. But you know, and so we go through, it's heightened, but like, we're not, we consider ourselves victim advocates. We don't victim blame at all. And we just drag these fucking pieces of shit for the pieces of shit they are. And we get angry, and the listeners like my anger, I guess, because they feel seen. And Patrick is just a screeching banshee who's here for all of it. And God bless him. That's all I have to say.
And that's all you need to say, because it was,
I mean, he's like, he's at 100 all the time.
Well, and both of you, I mean, it truly was like listening, because again, I know you, like we have talked, we have hung out, we have texted, like we've, you know, we watched movies together.
Yeah, this, we're pals.
We are pals. This side of you was incredible to get to know. I was just like, holy shit. It was just,
how do you end up doing it?
Yeah.
Well,
how do you go.
What do you mean?
Like if you guys hate true crime, if it makes you queasy, like where did the impetus to start this thing come from?
Well, I love true crime, but it does scare.
Would
like
you say
it
you're
is
obsessed.
Yeah, I would. Thank you so much, Alex. Yeah. We're gonna have fun here today. But yeah, it's one. It's like I am so mad about these things, or I want justice solved, or justice done, or I want to find the person, I want to get the guy.
Yeah.
So there's that sort of, we're not alone talking about it, and podcasting and listening to podcasts can be very lonely, because it just, or making a podcast especially, as you know, like literally listening to the voices in your head, and it's a very solitary thing. And so especially true crime, it's hard to find people who want to talk to you for an hour about that documentary you just watched. So for Patrick and I, like, we are always gonna, it started because Patrick had a Broadway backstory in Theater People. He was like the premier Broadway podcaster. I started the Hamilcast back in 2016. He reached out to me and said, you know, hey, I'm sorry, Nick, I have to do it. The world is wide enough. Like, let's be friends. Like, you're in theater podcasting. Huh. I'm in theater podcasting. And he was very like, let's be pals. And so we became pals through that sense, and then we started going out for cocktails, like, so like the amount of times we would text each other and say, you're not like in Midtown right now, right? At like 1:30 on a Monday, and we would just like meet at a bar, and then the Broadway talk started like very quickly into true crime talk, and then one thing led to another, and bada bing bada boom, as they say in the mob, and as a Pensavali, I'm allowed to say that, where here we are.
No, and it truly, and I think that's one of the things that I think is so special about that pod, is that you really do take this subject, which is grim and is just terrifying and terrible, and you make it empowering, and you make it fun is not the right word, but you definitely pull us along in a way that it's like, okay, like let's fucking get these guys. Let's, you know what I mean? Like, it was.
Yeah. Yeah, and thank you for that. Because the thing, I mean, it's a true crime comedy podcast, and immediately you see the look of disgust, a true crime comedy podcast. And it's like, no, we don't victim blame. We're never making fun of the families. But like the shitty lawyer whose suit doesn't fit and he's an asshole, yeah. The cops who are racist, yeah. Like the rapists, the animal abusers, the kidnappers, like we're going to drag them. And that's what people want to hear. Like, of course, they also want to hear like, and on February 7th, like some, you know, they want the Dateline, the Nightline stories, they want that. But it's a little bit of therapy to hear people say what the listeners say, like they're thinking, just the rage and anger. And we have to find stuff to laugh at or we're going to cry. It's 2020. If you don't get that now, then I can't help you. But if we don't kind of approach this with a little bit of levity, it's just, it's too grim. It's too, no. The whole thing is too bad, you know?
You're absolutely, and that's a great segue into the next question. How has your 2020 been going?
Terrible. Been... Thanks for asking. How are you?
Oh, listen, we're fucking like... right here, bruh. It is so real. It is so real on these streets, y'all.
Yeah, it's been, it's been tough. I'm super lucky that my career is something, you know, it's podcasting. We can do it remotely. Patrick and I had to, because True Crime Obsessed is my job and it's our business, and I'm thrilled and super grateful to be able to do it. But also it's like, well, you know, everyone else is at home. Let's churn out more content for them. Let's just make, you know, do what we can for these listeners who are so wonderful to us. But like emotionally and mentally, oh, it's been a nightmare.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, but I think you're exactly right, right? Like this idea that you have this place to go. And that's actually something I want to ask you about as well, is just like what it is like to literally pay your bills off podcasting. I mean, that is a feat, and that is a feat that, you know, in the kind of the ocean of podcasts that so few people have been able to say that they do. So like not only are you doing this for your livelihood, but it is also I imagine something that really focuses you and just keeps you in the pocket when everything is blowing up around you. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah. It's wild. And it's so interesting. Cause like I said before, you know, like the Hamilcast is exactly who I am. True Crime Obsessed is exactly who I am. That rage is real. Me being shocked by these things. Like that's all, it's not a bit. Like I'm the worst actress in the world. And like, I'm like too transparent for that shit. Like I can't put on an act and do it consistently like that for however many hours a week. And you know, so the True Crime Obsessed is my job and the Hamilcast is a passion project. Like I knew from the beginning I would never have ads on the Hamilcast. That's not what it's about. And Ted Michael Reed Sketches into Microphones, like now that I have the ability to say, yeah, like let's take on another passion project. And that's, you know, Mike's baby. So you guys can talk to him about that. But it's exciting to be the executive producer of that, like in my spare time, make the Hamilcast, and then be, you know, my job. And we joke about it on True Crime Obsessed all the time. It's a weird job. Like some of the words, some of the sentences we have to say are horrible things. I mean, the words that we are forced to say to describe these horrible things, like it's a weird job. But I remember like growing up, I had an interesting academic career because I was diagnosed so late in life with ADHD. I was diagnosed at 18, which is kind of really not a thing. So I struggled a lot in school. And then when I realized what it was, I became excellent at it. And I ended up loving it. And then I felt kind of cheated all those years. Like, man, I could have been loving this whole time. And I was so frustrated and couldn't articulate what was happening. And growing up, like, you know, I came from on-camera hosting, being like a VJ and doing all that stuff. And so there was never a thing to define what I wanted to do. Like podcasting was, when I started the Hamilcast, I never did it for the money. I never, you know, I knew that wasn't the thing, but it led me down this road. It led me to Patrick and it led me to True Crime Obsessed. And now it's my job. And looking back at all those frustrating conversations where I couldn't, so like, I just want to talk about things I love and be myself. And that wasn't a thing, you know, back then. And it was also just like, oh, yeah, but you have to have like a goal. And I'm like, well, yeah, I just want to be myself. Like, it was very frustrating for a very long time. And now to kind of sit here and be able to do this. But at the same time, like people ask that question a lot. And there is no like magic trick. There's no switch. It's incredibly hard work. I'm working all like to a fault. Like Mike is just like, you need to take a break. And I'm like, no, I don't. No, I can't. No, absolutely not. I have like all these deadlines and I love having the deadlines, but there is no magic trick. It's find the thing you love, work your ass off at it, and be nice. And that's kind of it. That's the gig.
But, and Alex, jump in here, because I know this is something we've talked about often. Because like it is, yes, it is the hard work, but Jillian, you also have I'm just being real. You have a very natural personality for this thing. And I think that, you know, yes, it is absolutely the endurance to stay in it and to just keep pushing and to be yourself. But like there is something about you and the way that you cover topics, whether it's Broadway or true crime or sketch comedy, that has brought a lot of audience members to you. And so what is the thing that you would say beyond just the you know, pedal to the pavement at all times that you think listeners are responding to about your work?
You're making me feel very shy. I'm blushing and I'm looking down as if you like I'm trying to hide. That's very, very kind of you, Nick. Thank you.
Oh, please.
You know, I think it's truly like, I really love it. It's what I wake up excited to do every day, even when it's hard and frustrating. And I think it's the love of the thing, whether that thing is Hamilton or that thing is talking to people. I have like a ton of questions for everyone all the time. I want to listen to I want to hear what people have to say. I want to hear everyone's stories. I'm so curious about how everyone got to this moment that led them in front of me. Or I want to fucking get the guy. and True Crime Obsessed. So like, I guess there's that. I think that comes through because I love doing it. And I think you can't really fake that. And without being like a dick about it or being too like patting myself on the back, I think it's just like find the thing that you really love to do, because that can't be taught and no one can replicate that. But, and, you know, like there are 800 zillion podcasts, and make them all. I talk about Hamilton for an hour a week, or Freestyle Love Supreme, or Heights or whatever. I talk about that area of the world 1 hour every week. That's what I give you, 1 hour a week. There are plenty of hours in the day. And then I give you an hour of true crime and like 15 minutes of sketch comedy. But that's not a lot of time in the day. Like, the world is wide enough. Make your goddamn podcast. Make your thing. Make your movie. Be a doctor. Be a barista. But if you love it, like, I'm going to go to the barista who's the nicest and like who really loves their job. That's who I'm going to like make sure I get in their line every week or whatever it is.
So you found yourself in the world of podcasts. Now, obviously, you've hooked onto it as something you're really good at and passionate about. But you got into it because you were a Hamilton fan, right? So like,
yeah,
the passion was completely different, where you like podcasting was a way for you to engage with Hamilton.
Yeah. Well, so because I hadn't, when I started the Hamilcast, I hadn't, ADHD makes it very hard to listen to podcasts because it's not visual. So it takes me double or triple the time as I think most people, because I'm constantly rewinding, or I'm like, wait, what? It's like for me with ADHD, if anyone can relate to this, it's like when you read a book and suddenly it's like three pages and you don't know what those three pages just said, mm-hmm. like you didn't retain it. That's what it's like for me listening to podcasts because they're not visual. It's a little tough for me. So I started the Hamilcast with no podcasting experience. I didn't listen to podcasts. I didn't have any equipment. And I also hadn't seen Hamilton.
Well, you hadn't seen it, but you started a podcast about it?
Yeah, I had just listened to it. Because the
Wait, what's that story?
The album came out in October of 2015. I'm sorry. If people are listening, I've told this story 100 times, so I'm sorry for everyone listening.
You do briefly.
No, Alex, that wasn't about you. That was about me, like, just saying the same shit over and over again. But yeah, so I heard it in 2015, and I fell in love with it. And I was like, this is awesome. And there was something, I can't explain it. I can't define it. It was a feeling, a drive, a fire that I'd never felt before. I was like, I want to make a podcast about this. The idea that those words even came into my brain is weird, because podcasting was not really on my radar. Yeah. It was just like, I want to talk about this thing all the time. I try to talk about this thing all the time, and I see people getting bored with me and their eyes glazing over and nobody really cares. But I know that people care. This is just, and I also didn't like think about it too much. It was like, here's what I want to do. I don't know what the goal is. I just want to make this thing about the thing. And I have to make this thing about the thing. Like, there was no question. There was no, should I? There was no, can I? Like, I was just like, I'm going to jump in to the deepest end of the pool and I'm going to tread water and figure this thing out. And that's what I did. And now 4.5 years later, 230 something episodes later, the entire cabinet, Nick on three times. I mean, like, it's grown into something I'm insanely proud of. And it started with me having zero knowledge, but being so eager to learn. Like, all I do is Google and learn things and like research things and watch YouTube videos about how to do shit that I don't know how to do. Like, maybe it's because I grew up as an only child. I've been pretty independent. Like, okay, well, it exists. Like, people have done this, right? So if I Google it or YouTube it, there's some like 14-year-old kid in London who can probably tell me how to do it. Like, especially the tech stuff. It's all like the young kids. But yeah, so that's how I just like taught myself how to do it.
Cool.
But I mean, what's incredible to me about this is like, yes, you taught yourself how to do it, but like, you have to understand, Alex, when I came into the show, I heard about it as like an established thing. Like, there was no idea. Like, I had, and even going on it, like, you know, they had this, I mean, they still do have this amazing website up. Like, it does, there's nothing about this that feels like this is this person's first podcast.
This
felt like you showed up and you're like, and she, like, they're making cocktails for you and like you having a whole conversation and it's like, goddamn, like, what the, like, did Lynn like just like pay someone to like make this? And then you find out that like, no, this is literally this person's like gumption and just love of the show, and you're like, oh shit, like, that's pretty incredible. And this also brings me to the other thing that I wanted to talk to you about, because I think that, you know, Hamilton fans are incredible fans, and I say the word incredible a lot. I gotta find other words, but incredible.
I know,
but it's a great word. Incredible buddies. Here we are. Incredible buddies.
Incredible
buddies. That's us.
That's it. That's the hashtag. We did it.
We did it. It's done. It's a wrap. But no, the thing that I will say, I think Hamilton fans are wonderful, but the Hamilcast fans, and I've brought this up often, The Hamilcast fans, you know, and especially the sect of the Hamilcast fans called the Patreon peeps.
They all say hi, by the way. They saw that you tweeted and I posted about it in the group, and they're all very excited. They say hello.
I say hello right back to them. They are, no, it's true. I mean, truly, like, it's to the point. I mean, like, they really are just such a loyal, like,
I love the number of like micro communities that exist because of technology.
It really is kind of
all
insane.
These different platforms, like these groups of people from 10 people to 100 people to 1,000 people, like all these little micro communities where people talk to each other about the thing that they love.
It's amazing.
It's amazing to hear about that.
Yeah. No, it really is. And I think that that's the thing that, you know, especially in this year when we're all so separated, I can't imagine, but I would think that having those communities right now is huge because this is what you were doing anyway. Do you know what I mean? You were meeting up virtually over things that, you know, because the peeps live in various different places, you know.
Most of these communities are good.
They're all over the world.
Exactly. And that's exactly right, Alex. Like, that's, I think for those of us who, and this is kind of, you know, why in my mind 2020 is absolutely in so many ways the year of the, I'm going to say this with, like, as somebody who counts himself as this, the year of the nerd. Because, like, we truly, you know, if you're saying that we can't leave our houses, you know, the way in which we're connecting is the way we've been connecting since the beginning. It's like literally since the beginning, since the internet was a thing, this is what we've been doing. And talk about the peeps, talk about how that specific sect came up, because those peeps, man, they're the real deal.
No, they are the real deal. So I started a Patreon for the Hamilcast pretty early on. I guess the podcast has been over 4.5 years. I guess the Patreon is maybe about probably 3.5 years. And so, you know, I when I say they contribute $5 a month and they get access to this amazing Facebook group. I know Facebook sucks, but like this community is so entrenched and amazing, but it's the kindest corner of the internet. And I mean that sincerely. And I'll dive into why that is, because it's just, it's so much more than your love of Hamilton, which is so important to note, I think, because these people from all over the world, they are all different ages. They are all different backgrounds. They come together. They have raised money for people. They have meetups together. Like there are people who are formed true family bonds. And they meet up independent of me. And just, they're so wonderful. If someone needs help, you know, I mean, I'm stuttering about it because I'm so overwhelmed by these people who are just, they are truly like the greatest people. And so the $5 gets them like not only access to this community, but they know who's coming on the pod before I post the selfie so they can submit questions. And so the questions that they submit, like, they care so much and I love it. So like they'll look up, even if it's an ensemble member in a company they've never seen, they follow everyone involved in Hamilton on every social media account. So they'll say, I really love that Insta story that's now gone. Remember 24 hours after, I really love that Insta story where you were talking about your dog or you were talking about your mental health or you were talking about your family. Hey, how's your sister? From that thing you posted that one time that was 30 seconds. Like they care about the people on the show and they care about each other. And there are hundreds of them. And it's really, I think about the peeps and I get really speechless about it because it's just this kind world. And, you know, someone joins the group and I say, and, you know, the pin post, please feel free to introduce yourself if that's what you're comfortable with. I promise you, you'll get like the warmest welcome in the world. And within minutes, hundreds of like gifts, like welcome, like Steve Colbert, like welcome to the nerd zone, my friend, or Lynn, I have no chill whatsoever. Like, it's just like, it's a party every time someone walks in the door. Aww. It's amazing. It's really, really wonderful. And I love hearing stories from cast members at the stage door. Like now, like Ian Weinberger, who's a musician, like he gets stage doored. Annalie Craig, who does sound, like she will get like fanfare at the stage door, which people who are in the pit or behind the scenes, or Holly Campbell, who works in the office, they're not used to that. And a goal on the Hamilcast is just like, all right, so I have your ear about the Hamilton stuff, but here's a cool thing to learn. Like it takes a fucking village to make any show go on. Every show on Broadway has a company manager. Every show has a Holly. Holly's awesome, right? Like it takes a Holly to make Beetlejuice happen. And make all Ain't Too Proud happen. Like there is an Annalie Craig at Ain't Too Proud. And that's awesome. And so it's sort of, you know, I even said like Jared Dixon was on, who's amazing. And it's like, okay, so I have your ear about Hamilton and Burr, and Jared's amazing. But now we're going to learn about Tupac for a little bit. And the fact that these listeners are so willing to go on this journey with me, and no one ever says like, you really talk too much about non-Hamilton stuff. They're just like thrilled to learn about these people. They're all me. Just excited to learn about shit all the time.
No, you really do have like an army of you, and it's really awesome. Like, I mean that in the highest respect. It is really cool. I also, the Jared Dixon episode, Alex, if you want to hear somebody being unreasonably nice to me, you should listen to part two.
We hated doing it, but it's just
I don't want to. I don't want to listen to that.
Yeah, it
that
really
painful.
It really is disturbing. I texted him after listening. I was like, you fuck. Guy, yeah. Get out of here.
If it made you uncomfortable, we did our job.
You did. You did, in fact, do your job. But now you're here on our thing. You're doing this thing. And it feels very full circle, because I actually think that this is right. This is maybe like, you know, I think the fourth or third anniversary of, I think, when we first met, maybe. Because didn't we meet in the fall of that year?
That sounds about right, because I remember the cocktail was bourbon. It felt very fally, bourbon. The cocktail. Yeah,
and because we had met at LaWoye's party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
thinking back to I was actually just having lunch with that dear boy, and just thinking back to all those memories.
Yeah,
you know, in that little you know, where we are now and where we have been, but now you're here on this dumb thing.
I'm so excited. Thank you for having me and letting me ramble for half an hour. This has been wonderful. And we didn't even really get started. This is so exciting.
Oh, no. This is what we do.
I love it.
This is how it starts.
I know. I love it.
We just let you know. And what we'll do, you know, since it's been a good half hour, I mean, this is as good a time as any for a little commercial break where we have to, you know, pay our bills with words and nonsense. So
hey,
we'll take a quick break here. And then when we come back, we will tell you our movie theme, and we will break down these movies, and Alex will say something horrible to me, and it'll be what we usually do, you know? So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Ooh, getting good at that.
I love the live throw to an ad. That's phenomenal.
Mid-roll,
that's really,
baby.
Really great.
Mid-roll. All right. And we are back, as not to lose any momentum, because I don't want to talk about, you know, too much of the ads. Ads are ads, and they'll ad forever.
Ads, who knows what that was even an ad for?
Yeah,
I guess we'll find out.
I'm guessing it was probably something to do with
we support that.
Yeah, we are completely 100% behind that ad that was just given to us.
If you don't buy what we're selling, that would be a true crime.
Oh, yeah.
I'll kill you. Jillian, he does this thing. He does this thing that's so annoying where he just like, he finds a way to like sneak it in. And it, and
I know.
It really
it's called a transition, and it's what professionals do. Okay.
God damn you. God damn you. Yeah, yeah. But no, so today's theme is, of course, in honor of Jillian, the true crime movie. Which is a
crime movie.
Very exciting, because we've done a crime movie, and we done.
I'm excited because this is our first in conceptualizing the show. We realize you're going to run out of basic genres really quickly, and
very quickly we
always talked about, okay, well, we can do a genre and then come back and do a more specific version of that. And so we have done a crime episode. So it's nice to see that this system works.
The system works. We've even done a heist episode. Do you know what
and
I mean?
We did a heist episode. That's so, like, true. We're
digging
about
through.
It.
Oh yeah.
In like what, 18 episodes,
buddy? This is not going to last long. We're really burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah, I'll talk to you in 4.5 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh my god.
The true heist movie.
No, this is true crime, and we definitely wanted to do this in honor of Jillian and you know, of course. No. And also, you know, I think that this is such an interesting genre, because within this genre, and I don't know if you guys found this, there are just so many types of movie within the true crime movie. Like, when I first started thinking about this, I was like, yeah, you know, there's the ones that just came to my head automatically, and I was like, oh, but wait, but that's actually based on a real story, and that's a real story. And then I just got this whole swath. Yeah, Alex,
I found the same thing, because there's a lot of stuff out there that is, it's derived from a true crime story, right? It's based on loosely, and then there's movies that are trying to tell exactly what happened in its ABC order. And at the heart of it all, what I love about it is that because it happened, all of these stories are really trying to dig out who are these people that can commit these acts and why. Like, what are the events that lead to these things happening? And it's such a ripe ground for character study.
Did either of you find that when you were watching, a movie, when you're thinking about what movie you wanted, Was there similar to listening to a true crime podcast? Was there a sense of apprehension about it? Because that was the one thing that I was like, ooh.
No. Well, it depends on your definition of crime, I think.
That's exactly right. Jillian, how about for you? And
I was so ready. I didn't give it a second thought. I've been, as Rudy said, I've been waiting for this my whole life. I had no question in my mind.
That's exciting. That's very exciting. I mean, listen, that's what we want on this pod. We want that. Oh, I mean,
I am amped. I'm so ready.
Oh my god! Yeah, no. So we got it. We got to just jump in with these, because let's discuss. Let's get in. I mean,
you want to just jump in?
I'll jump in first, because I think with a true crime movie, you know, I like I said, definitely looking for a movie that focuses in on something that happened, something that really happened. But also, one of the things that I was looking for was, what movie does this with style? What movie makes this? Takes this from a place where it's just me watching something that actually happened, and kind of have, you know, that feeling that you have when you, like, whenever I watch something based on real life, especially a crime movie based on real life, I'm always like, oh my god, this actually happened. And I feel very, again, that's that apprehension that I'm talking about. Like, it's like, ooh, what the hell? You know, I wanted to watch something that would give me some joy, and this movie certainly did that. So I'll start. So, you know, this movie opens on an animated opening credit sequence. Animated almost like you're watching Mad Men. Like, very stylized, very like the you know, these figures, like yep, exactly.
I know it.
Yep, you know.
Can I guess? Or do you want to keep going? Go,
give me
go, go.
Well, who, let me ask you this. Who does the score?
Shit.
Who does it? Give me your guess. Give me your guess. Go ahead.
Is it? It's not John Bryan, is it?
No.
No.
Nope.
Who the hell does it?
You got the first name right. It's two names, one of whom. This, by the way, you are the fastest guess I think we've ever had. That this might be the fastest guess.
I could also be completely wrong.
No,
is it John Williams?
It is John Williams. It is.
You know Jurassic Park didn't actually happen, right?
Yeah, I know that's not a real movie, Alex. Do you want me to keep going and then we see? Then we
yeah,
see
yeah, if... yeah, keep going, keep
All right.
going.
So the score is truly, I mean, it is John Williams' score, and I will say it is one of the most beautiful John Williams scores. In fact, I think this score was nominated for an Academy Award. And I'll sing a little bit of it. It's doo-doo. Do 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 do.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I was right.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. You know exactly what movie it is, and we have this beautiful opening montage with this animated scene, and you see this gentleman. He's an airplane pilot, and then he's running, and no, now he's a doctor, and then he's running, and no, now he's a lawyer, and then we open up, and it's a game show called To Tell the Truth, and we focus on our main character, Frank Abagnale Jr. in Catch Me If You Can, directed by Steven Spielberg.
Dear Dad, You always told me that an honest man has nothing to fear, so I'm trying my best not to be afraid. I'm sorry I ran away, but you don't have to worry. I'm gonna get it all back now, Daddy. I promise. I'm gonna get it all back.
Y'all, so this movie, I gotta
I figured this was, I was thinking about this one, and I was like, you know what? Like, 90% chance Nick's gonna pick.
Oh, absolutely.
This is
such a great pick. Oh, man. This is great.
Yeah, it really is one of those movies where you watch it and you're just, so you know, Alex, you talked about this idea of being, you know, of wanting to know why people do the things they do. That's so much of this true crime idea. And this movie kind of is perfect for that. And it really is this character study of this kid and how he becomes a crook and how he stops. Like, that's literally the film.
How and why.
And why.
I think.
And why.
Yeah.
And you know, I was reading up on it, and apparently aside from some, like, details, like, there's definitely, you know, stuff about his family that didn't play out in the exact way that it did. And there's one thing where there's an escape that he does through the toilet of an airplane. And apparently he did not escape through the toilet. He escaped through another hatch. But other than that, he was like, yeah, it's pretty accurate. Like, that's
I've heard is that it's actually, the movie doesn't show, you know, nearly half of what actually happened.
Of
there's
what
a lot
did.
More that they just couldn't include.
Yeah. And it's so Catch Me If You Can is this story of a Frank Abagnale Jr., young kid in New York who, good kid. His dad is like, upper echelon of their local Rotary Club. But you slowly realize that his dad, played by Christopher Walken, and what is an incredible performance, is kind of a crook, is kind of a swindler, and you know, kind of swindles his way to status. His mother and father get divorced, and that is like the big psychic wound for Frank, and that sends him running.
I want you to go into the kitchen, sit at the table, and put a name down. You can take as long as you want, but when you come back into this room, I want to see a name on that line.
Frank, just write down a name. This will all be over. It's going to be okay.
Dad, what name? Your mother or your father. Just put the name there. It's as simple as that. And don't look so scared. It's not a test. There's no wrong answer.
And then, kind of as the perfect protege to his father, he ends up scamming his way around the country. He is forging checks. He ends up pretending to be this airplane pilot. Then pretends to be a doctor, and then pretends to be a lawyer, and like is able to get away with it. And all the while is being chased by Tom Hanks as Carl Hanratty, who is based on Detective Joseph Shea, who did not want his name used in the film. So it just kind of chronicles that. But I think the reasons I love this movie are myriad, but the things that come to mind immediately. Number one, Steven Spielberg as the man who, I think, you know, I have a theory that a lot of directors can only tell one story and or one theme. And I really do stick by this. And for Spielberg, I have always believed that the only story Spielberg tells is a story of parents and children. If you go through all of his movies, that is the theme, that is the story that comes back over and over, really about fathers and sons, but definitely, you know, more zoomed out, parents and children. And this story is no less, because the entire reason that Frank does what he does is to bring his family back together. It's really the story of this broken home and this kid trying to prove that his or will his mother and father to get back together, with, you know, making them proud with how much he's accomplishing in the world. You know, and the most powerful scene of that, I think, is I say Christopher Walken has some amazing, amazing roles, but I was struck last night watching this, or amazing, amazing scenes. I was struck last night watching this when it's the scene when he first takes his son out to dinner, or Frank takes Christopher Walken out to dinner.
My son bought me a Cadillac today. I think that calls for a toast. You're the best damn pilot in the sky.
It's not what you think. I'm just a co-pilot.
You see these people staring at you? These are the most powerful people in New York City. And they keep peeking over their shoulders, wondering where you're going tonight. Where are you going, Frank?
I had nobody staring at me.
someplace exotic. Just tell me where you're going.
Like, and just like the pride that he feels for his son, even though he's fully aware that his son is like doing massive like capital crimes. You know what I mean? Like, it like just terrible, you know? But Christopher Walken is, I mean, he just, the pride in his eyes and the tears in his eyes later in the film. Also, I'm going to say, Leo, I think this is possibly one of my favorite Leo performances. I don't know what you two think about that.
Yeah, me too. I love him in this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite the,
well, I think, yeah, Leo's got his two phases, right? There's young Leo, which is like the energetic, rambunctious, you know, sexy young Leo. And then there's like mature Leo, older Leo, who's a lot more serious and all that. And I think this film falls in that nice in-between place where he's playing a youthful character, but there's actually some wisdom behind his eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a,
you buy him,
definitely one of his,
you
best.
Buy him as the 16-year-old, you buy him as the 23-year-old, you know, and it works. I think, you know, it really just comes down to, again, so many elements, but I just think that the theme of this movie was so clear. And I think, and that's my, you know, I'm interested to see when we get to your choices, how your movies approach this, because, you know, when you have a story that's this, that's true to life, right? What is your responsibility to authentically replicate it? Do you know
what's nice about Abagnale's story is that there's not a need to inflate it,
right,
to make it interesting. There's right. not a need to make stuff up surrounding it. There's not a need to embellish relationship drama or anything, because like the stuff he did in reality was so out there and crazy. And I think that because he never killed anybody, you know, he never, like, he did really, really illegal stuff that seems crazy and is dangerous. Like, don't impersonate a doctor. That's dangerous.
Yeah, please don't do that.
Plane, that's dangerous.
Please,
like,
don't do that. He did pass the
things.
Bar, though.
He so did like, pass
he,
the
and
bar.
He did pass the bar. Like he's doing these things that are illegal, but also not terrible. And it takes a very unique person to pull it off. You know, even one of the things, it takes a very special person to pull it off. So it's
Jillian, let me ask you this. Did you see the musical Catch Me If You Can?
I didn't, but I love Norbert Leo Butz so much. So I missed it in real time, but I have listened to it, and I was gonna say you might be the only pick whose movie actually turned into a musical.
That's
I don't
true.
I can't say that for mine. Alex, I don't know about you.
I would doubt it.
Yeah. Could go ahead and say that's probably true. But, you know, it's so interesting because I actually, you know, this is a terrible, bad Broadway actor of me. But I watched a bootleg of it this morning. I did. Because I just, you know, I wanted to see. I was like, how the hell do you
wanted to steal a copy about a movie of
talk
people,
about a true
about
crime.
Stealing. It's such a true crime, guys. And I just admitted to it.
Mood.
Fuck.
Layers,
oh my God.
On layers on layers.
But I didn't film it and I didn't post it. I just watched it, you know, whatever.
Watched a version that someone filmed?
Yeah, I watched a version that someone filmed from like the Mez. It's so bad. It's so
bad. I don't
bad,
know how dude. They get away with it,
what
honestly.
The hell?
That's a whole other conversation, because I know from you, from like my friends on stage, that it's so, you can see them, but like, how are there so many bootlegs of full musicals
tons.
Up there? I don't know
because
how they get away
with it. People are sneaky. People are really sneaky and they get away with it.
I forgot you were talking about the musical. I'm like, you downloaded the movie that someone recorded while it was in the theaters?
No,
like,
God
what?
Damn it.
The...
No.
Okay, this makes a lot more sense now. Everything's
watching a bootleg of the movie about
stealing. I've
either
had too much coffee or not enough coffee. I don't know.
Either way, dude, it's great. No, but I was watching this and it was interesting. I mean, because I, like you said, I love, so Alex, if you don't know Norbert Leo Butz, who you should know. I mean, did you watch Bloodline on Netflix?
Bloodline is like,
so
I
he
love
plays,
it so much. Kevin.
He plays Kevin, the brother who works on the dock.
He's phenomenal.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's
and
fantastic.
He plays in the musical, he's Carl Hanratty. He's Tom Hanks. And he kills it. I mean, he kills it. But it was interesting, though, because, you know, I was watching, you know, watching the movie and then watching the musical. It was just the kind of thing, again, I'm not knocking anybody who worked on that show. I'm not knocking all. I actually loved the performances. I think the music was great. But the thing that I just realized just in the translation, I was like, the movie is subtle. And like, it is a comedy. It is a straight comedy. So there's no denying it's comedic chops. The movie is funny as hell. But I think why I buy it as a true crime movie is because it really is it allows itself to find like a groundedness and I don't know, even with, you know, Spielberg, who is possibly one of the most stylized directors of our time, like how many more, you know, people is he going to backlight? Do you know what I mean? With a tinge of glow around their hair. And
swelling music. Like, Spielberg, we get it. We're supposed to be emotional right now.
We get it, man. You love emotion. And that's great. But it was just watching this musical, I was like, I just lost that. And again, the musical is its own beast. But I sat there thinking, like, how would you capture that nuance on stage? And I think it's possible. I think it would have to be a different production. But that said, really cool that they did it. But yeah, that you know, Catch Me If You Can. Love that movie, and if you have not seen it, please check it out. Joyous film.
It's a joyous film,
you know.
Joy. Yeah, yeah, I like that because it's also a time period too. I mean, it's like 50s, 60s, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Like around in there, this time where everything was so superficial that there are really good stories from every direction. Where like the reality that everyone thinks they're living in, you know, there's stuff going on underneath. And I think it's a positive, entertaining take on that, as opposed to like the serial killers from that time.
Yep.
Who there was really dark, terrible stuff going on that like they were trying to polish over in culture.
Yeah. It's just like aesthetically beautiful. I love that whole era, that whole, just the look of it all, like the Mad Men look. So it's just so like just how they do all the costumes and the set design, and just it's aesthetically so like, oh, and you
without
get that
feeling
right from
insincere
the credits.
Cartoony,
100%. It's like Mad, like I'm obsessed with Janie Bryant, who's the costume director from Mad Men and Deadwood and like 100 other things. Yeah. But she does that same thing. Like she's a genius, but she also does like all the research. So it just feels perfectly authentic and familiar. I didn't grow up in the 60s, but it feels like, oh, right. That's exactly right.
It's amazing, the attention to detail on Mad Men. Stuff that's like normal stuff, right? Yeah. Just like how do you turn the clock back in every single way, from the carpet to the costumes to the phones to like, yeah. It's...
Yep.
But that is the kind of stuff, you know, that you need when you're going to, I think when you're going to do one of these movies, because even if you're not trying to represent it exactly how it was, you need to have a feel of authenticity to your movie or at least authenticity to the world you're trying to create. And I think that is definitely.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. So my movie also took place in the 50s.
Ooh.
Unfortunately, you will have to tune in next week to find out what that decision is, because we are out of time. Nick has a plane to catch to JFK. Jillian Pensavalli will join us again to tell us what her choice is. I will tell you what my choice is. Everybody will be happy, and the world will be a peaceful place next week on Little Justice.
Little Justice. Little Justice. Little Justice. Fuck yeah.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.